DayJet ceases operations. Eclipse Aviation says life will go on without its largest customer. And a Russian accident investigation turns to pilot error. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, September 22nd, 2008. DayJet, which sought to pioneer per-seat on-demand business transport using very light jets, notified the FAA Friday it's parking its fleet effective immediately. DayJet's normal website was replaced on Friday with a message to customers, apologizing for the inconvenience and blaming a lack of access to capital. There were earlier hints of that problem. DayJet laid off 100 of its 260 employees in May, also blaming an inability to raise capital. The shutdown is no doubt highly frustrating. DayJet founder Ed Iacobucci told us months ago that the company's first phase had been a success, proving, quote, yes, customers will fly in a small jet. Yes, customers will embrace the per-seat model. Yes, customers will pay a premium for tangible value. Yes, the technology works as planned. And most importantly, yes, we can find these customers, unquote. DayJet was by far the biggest customer for the Eclipse 500 very light jet, accounting for about half of the 2,700 orders claimed by Eclipse. Back in May, when DayJet announced the layoffs after taking delivery of only 28 planes, Eclipse's then CEO Vern Rayburn dismissed the matter, saying, quote, the last company I'm losing any sleep over is DayJet, unquote. DayJet execs, however, may have lost some sleep over delays at Eclipse. Among its statements Friday, DayJet said its plans were, quote, plagued by 3 years of delayed aircraft deliveries, unquote, perhaps suggesting that had the planes been delivered on time before the current credit squeeze, things might have turned out different. FAA spokesman Les Doerr told the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, DayJet has informed the agency it plans to keep just one aircraft flying for use by executives. The suspension of normal operations is significant to the FAA's test of ADS-B in Florida. The ground stations just came online, and DayJet was supposed to be a partner in testing them. Iacobucci also stepped down Friday as DayJet CEO. The company says he'll continue to serve as chairman of the board. DayJet CFO and senior VP of operations John Staton has been named interim CEO. We'll keep you updated as more details emerge at aero-news.net. Eclipse tried Saturday to put the shutdown at DayJet in the best possible light. In its official statement, quote, while DayJet was Eclipse's largest customer, Eclipse's business model and success has never relied solely on DayJet. Eclipse still has hundreds of orders to fill independent of DayJet, and existing customers will be happy and eager to move up in line. Eclipse also anticipates ongoing interest in the United States, as well as fulfilling the strong demand for the Eclipse 500 in the global markets, unquote. Eclipse also noted DayJet attained some success in proving the per-seat on-demand jet air taxi concept, opening the door for future providers and Eclipse customers. Eclipse finished its statement, like others lately, by announcing there would be no media interviews granted or further information released at this time. ABC News has released the identities of two pilots lost Friday night when a chartered Learjet 60 crashed on takeoff from Columbia Metropolitan Airport in South Carolina. The bodies of 31-year-old Sarah Lemon and 52-year-old co-pilot James Bland were identified by the Lexington County coroner. Both pilots were based in Southern California. Two other victims had been previously identified as passengers Chris Baker and Charles Still. A witness told CNN he saw two men get dumped out of the plane as it impacted a berm across a road from the end of the runway and burst into flames. He said their clothes were on fire and both men were patting down each other trying to put out the flames. Officials believe the men were the only two survivors of the crash. Former Blink-182 drummer Travis Barker and Hollywood party DJ Adam Goldberg. Both were among the performers at a free concert Friday night in Columbia's Five Points District. Baker and Still were described as members of Barker's entourage. The NTSB has dispatched a go team. Investigators on the case of an Aeroflot Nord 737 that crashed in Russia's Ural Mountains September 14th said Thursday that both engines were operating at the time of impact, contradicting earlier witness reports stating one was on fire. The Associated Press reports Russia's Interstate Aviation Committee found no signs of an engine fire in the wreckage. The plane crashed during its approach to land in the city of Perm. All 88 souls on board were lost. The focus of the investigation now shifts to an air traffic controller's claims the 737's pilot acted disoriented just before the crash. In an interesting turn of events, Aeroflot has disowned its former subsidiary. That happened last Monday, less than 24 hours after the accident. The carrier is now known as Arkhangelsk Airlines, returning to the name it had before Aeroflot took over in 2004. Aeroflot maintains the decision to cut AVL loose was made prior to the accident. Up next on ANN, Lockheed pushes back against those who call the F-35 a dog. An airport security video provides clues in a Spanair crash. And the NTSB says a pilot flew despite serious cardiac issues. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply Canal tips, composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for September 22nd. I'm Paul Platt. In response to criticism of the new F-35 Lightning II fighter, manufacturer Lockheed Martin responds that U.S. Air Force analyses show the plane to be at least 400% more effective in air-to-air combat than the best fighters currently available in the international market. Reuters reports the controversy started after the Pacific Vision 2008 War Games exercise in Hawaii, when industry watcher Winston Wheeler and Pierre Spray, an aide to then-Defense Secretary James Schlesinger in the 70s, said the F-35 appears too fast for a tactical role, too delicate in head-to-head combat, and too flammable to withstand sustained rounds from ground fire. Spray was a member of the team that produced the F-16 and the A-10 Warthog, and he says the combat simulations reveal, quote, the F-35 is a dog, unquote, when compared against Saab's Gripen, the Dassault Rafale, MiG-35 and Sukhoi Su-35, and the Eurofighter Typhoon. Spray's comments added fuel to a fire started when Australian newspapers reported that F-35s were, quote, clubbed like baby seals, unquote, by simulated Sukhois during the war game simulation. Lockheed got backup in refuting those reports from Major General Charles R. Davis, F-35 Program Executive Officer. Quote, the reports are completely false and misleading and have absolutely no basis in fact. The Pacific Vision war game that has been referenced did not even address air-to-air combat effectiveness. The F-35 is required to be able to effectively defeat current and projected air-to-air threats. All available information at the highest classification indicates the F-35 is effectively meeting these aggressive operational challenges, unquote. Lockheed called the Pacific Vision war game a tabletop exercise. Tom Burbidge, Lockheed Martin Executive VP of F-35 Program Integration, added, quote, the critics seem to get credibility, but the program doesn't, unquote. Spray and Wheeler say they stand by their accusations. Airport security video of an accident involving a Spanair MD-82 in Madrid, released last week, shows the nose of the plane pitched up sharply before it crashed off the side of the runway and exploded. The footage of the August 20th accident was taken from some distance away from the runway at Barajas International Airport. It shows a grainy image of the airliner speeding down the runway. Though not clear, it does appear to support a preliminary report issued last week by investigators, which suggests the plane's flaps were not deployed for takeoff. You can find a link to see the video itself in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. The National Transportation Safety Board now says the pilot of a Geico Skytypers North American SNJ-2 that crashed during a rehearsal flight for last year's Oceania Air Show had withheld crucial medical information from the FAA when applying for renewal of his medical certificate, information that might have led to denial of his flying privileges. On September 7, 2007, 74-year-old Jan Wildberg piloted the trailing aircraft in a flight of five that had just performed a low flyover at Show Center. The group then executed a climbing right turn in formation, setting up to land, but Wildberg's aircraft failed to turn, instead proceeding straight ahead in a wings-level attitude, losing altitude until it impacted terrain. The crash destroyed the aircraft and killed Wildberg. NTSB found the FAA denied Wildberg's application for a second-class medical in December of 2005, when his cardiologist disclosed that Wildberg had been treated for heart problems for about 3 years. The doctor had okayed him to fly, but the FAA denied the medical because Wildberg had not reported the heart problems on previous applications during that 3-year period. The pilot had experienced chest pain and an abnormal heart rhythm he didn't report when the FAA granted him a special issuance second-class medical in 2006, and had since had episodes of chest pain, shortness of breath, a sense of fullness in the head, atrial fibrillation, and an abnormal heart rhythm. None were reported to the FAA. The NTSB noted that the alpha and beta blockers Wildberg was taking should have precluded him from flying aerobatics, and fellow pilots noted that on the day of the crash, the pilot looked pale and was observed nodding off during a pre-flight briefing. They also told the NTSB that Wildberg was not his usual conversational self on the morning of the accident flight. The comments from the NTSB come in an updated factual report. A final probable cause report has not yet been issued. Grobe Aerospace, which filed for insolvency August 19th, has lost its deal to develop Bombardier's Learjet 85 primary and secondary structure. Bombardier made the announcement Thursday, saying it will build the upcoming composite jet on its own, given the uncertainty surrounding Grobe's insolvency. When Grobe announced the insolvency, due to delays in the development of its own SPN Very Light jet, it emphasized that its other contract work would continue, and Bombardier stood by its contractor. It's not clear what has changed since then, but Grobe is accepting of the decision. Quote, "Whilst this outcome is regrettable, it is a matter of fact that Bombardier needs to take whatever measures they deem necessary in order to protect the timeline of their program," unquote. Bombardier spokesman Leo Knappen told Bloomberg the decision to bring Learjet 85 development in-house will not affect first flight and deliveries. Still ahead, Qantas gets its first A380. A closed Boeing plant may become a movie studio. And here's what it takes to book the B-2 bomber for your next event. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your aero briefing for Monday, September 22nd. I'm Paul Plack. Australia's flag carrier, Qantas, took delivery of the first of 20 Airbus A380s it has on order at a ceremony in Toulouse, France, on Friday evening. Qantas CEO Jeff Dixon and CEO-designate Alan Joyce picked up the keys from Airbus President Tom Enders and Sales Chief John Leahy. The Qantas execs hinted at more orders to come. Dixon told Business Week, quote, "It was always our intention to grow the A380 fleet beyond 20, unquote. The Qantas version of the plane sports an interior by famed Aussie designer Mark Newson and has a three-class configuration that seats 450 passengers. That's about 75 fewer than the typical A380. Qantas was the first customer to sign a contract for the A380 in November of 2000. Its original 12 orders were the first in years for Airbus aircraft from Qantas. The airline will start commercial A380 service from Melbourne to Los Angeles on October 20th and from Sydney to Los Angeles on the 24th. Character actor Jack O'Halloran is best known for his movie roles as Moose Malloy in 1975's Farewell, My Lovely, and as the non-speaking Kryptonian villain Non, battling Christopher Reeve as Superman. But O'Halloran has long wanted to build his own gigantic movie-making studio, with dozens of sound stages, post-production facilities, a hotel for the actors and crew, a commissary, offices, and enough room to build huge indoor sets. It looks now like he may have found just the place. On the northeast corner of Long Beach, California Airport sits a huge empty hangar, over 1 million square feet. It was built in the 1940s by Douglas Aircraft and has been vacant since Boeing stopped producing the 717 airliner there in 2006. The hangar was built robustly and sits on 78 acres. It features 50-foot-high steel beam ceilings with enough strength to hang lighting and other heavy objects, and a roof strong enough to support the weight of a 22-acre backlot. The floor was built to support almost 1 million pounds per square foot, and 30-ton rolling cranes run overhead. The Los Angeles Times reports O'Halloran and former Sony and EMI executive Jay Samet have partnered and worked with Long Beach Mayor Bob Foster and are expected to take over the facility early next year. Other similar small studio projects in Southern California haven't worked out so well, but the advantages in logistics and cost may make this one compelling to producers. O'Halloran notes, quote, "You can walk on the lot and never leave it," unquote. The first phase should be finished by 2010, including 600,000 square feet of sound stages, post-production facilities, a hotel, interior walls, and parking. Phase two, another 500,000 square feet of sound stages, could be complete a year later. I hope they've thought through this idea of putting a working soundstage near jets taking off. We'll just clean it up in post. The Denver Broncos' first regular season home game, September 14th, had a spectacular opening. Just as the national anthem was ending, a U.S. Air Force B-2 bomber made a flyover at Invesco Field. The last visit by a B-2 to a Denver Broncos game was 3 years ago. Teresa Scheer, the director of cheerleaders and game day entertainment, told the Denver Westward, quote, "We apply for it every year, but it's a very hard plane to get," unquote. It turns out a Broncos season ticket holder is also an employee of Northrop Grumman and was able to pull a few strings. It's still not a simple deal, though. The FAA, Department of Defense, and the Bomber's Air Force Unit all had to sign off. The process is said to have required the submission of more than 60 forms and months of waiting. The stunt no doubt burned a bunch of fuel, but Scheer said flyovers serve as training opportunities. Quote, "It helps them with timing on targets. Right at the end of the national anthem, the bomber needs to be right over the top of the stadium," unquote. The Broncos and the Chargers also played to a spectacular finish, but both could use their own departments of defense this season. The Broncos won 39-38 on a last-minute two-point play following a touchdown. And finally, the folks at Laminar Research have now brought the X-Plane to the iPhone. That's right. Macworld reports it by taking X-Plane version 9 and removing much of the worldwide database, nav aids, all but four of the aircraft types, some of the accuracy of the simulator, and all but one airport. They've managed to get X-Plane down from 60 gigabytes to 7. Granted, the world is now limited to within a few dozen miles of Innsbruck, Austria, but who among us wouldn't love the chance to go mountain flying in the Alps in an indestructible airplane? Macworld's Rob Griffiths writes that the simulator uses the iPhone's built-in accelerometers to allow the user to climb, descend, and turn just by tilting the phone. He reports the sensitivity is just about right, the scenery is realistic, and there are four planes available. Although the Cessna 172, Cessna 400, Cirrus Vision Jet, and Piaggio Avanti all share the same crude heads-up display, unlike the realistic, fully implemented instrument panels in the desktop version. He also reports a few bugs, but X-Plane has an admirable history of getting such things fixed. It's difficult not to note the irony. With digital accelerometers, 8 or 16 gigabytes of memory, and heads-up instruments, this scaled-down version of X-Plane has way more modern technology than a real 172. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I'll talk with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves about trim stalls and the special considerations involved in landing on grass strips. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.